Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody from Chicago, Illinois. In this podcast segment, we have the honor and privilege of interviewing Mr. Tal Morgenstern. He is the co-founder and CSO of Vulcan Cyber. They have headquarters in Israel and also have offices out here in the United States. Tal, thank you for your time this morning, and let's go and get started.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Okay, let's go and get started. We did some background snooping on you. I mean, we didn't do a background check or anything, but we looked you up on Google and LinkedIn, you know, and you seem to have a very deep and rich background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us, how you got started in cyber? What was your motivating factor? And some of the milestones in your career?
Yeah, definitely. So I actually started as a developer, so coding C, C++, but really kind of the back in like 20 years ago. But then the whole cyber infrastructure started. I started working with checkpoint firewalls, and I got drawn to this. Eventually ending up doing a lot of hands-on with firewalls and network security. And then later on, I was managing teams that are doing that. And from there on, I moved to professional services. I was a QSA, a PCI DSS assessor. I helped over 100 different organizations actually manage their security programs and prepare for PCI assessments. And from there, I moved to a large defense contractor in Israel called Elbit Systems. Worked on a project for large governments. After we launched the project, actually went on to work on one of the first EDR products that started. I was a system architect there, and then the chief architect of that project. Really interesting time, kind of hunting for zero days, and kind of the initial days of machine learning and AI.
Okay, cool. That sounds great. Now tell us about your company, Vulcan Cyber. Tell us how the idea came from, how you got the name, and how it started out, and where it's at today.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, working in kind of the EDR space, hunting for zero days. I was working with Yaniv, the CEO of Vulcan today, and we started talking, and it got us thinking that really even the most sophisticated attacks, they start actually with like the basics, like phishing attacks or misconfigurations or on unpatched servers, and this was not handled well. We actually even had an incident in our space where we had a vulnerability, an Apache vulnerability that we needed to patch, and it was really hard. Like no one really knew what to do. The whole process around this on how to patch the vulnerability was really complex. They put it on the QA, and the QA didn't know what to do with that. And then the DevOps didn't know what to do with that. So eventually we patched that vulnerability. And then a few days later, there was another vulnerability in Apache, and really, really annoying kind of situation. But I thought, being not a very mature in security-wise team, maybe other places they know how to do that. So I talked to two friends of mine, CISOs in larger places, and basically I heard like the same story again and again. Like we do it, but it's vulnerability management. It's hard. It's really difficult to accomplish, and tracking is hard, and so on. So that really got us focused on vulnerability management and how can we improve that process within you know, the organizations. So that's been our focus ever since. We started the company in 2018, and we're helping organizations manage their risk. Today, we do it not only from for operating system and applications. We also work with companies that develop their own code. We integrate to many different tools that can monitor code security, like SAS and Dust and SCA and cloud security, and really help manage the whole process of risk remediation.
Hmm. Excellent. Okay. Well, now your company, how large is your company now? I mean, how many employees do you have? A presence in other countries except for the U.S. and Israel?
Yeah, definitely. So we're 100 employees. Sort of half of them are based in Israel, which is the R&D center, mm-hmm. and the rest is spread out with the majority in the U.S. And we also have some presence in Australia and EMEA. In London and in Paris as well. So we sell globally. Where we don't have an actual presence, we have partners that we work with.
Okay, excellent. Now, your company, the customer base, what's your sweet spot? Is it the small, medium-sized business, the government, whether it's in Israel or the U.S., or is it the Fortune 500, like the multinational companies, or is it a conglomeration of all three of them?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of everything. I think that the sweet spot is enterprise customers, large enterprises. This is where we see the most complex problems and challenges that we can help with. But we do have smaller companies that use the product. We actually have a free offering that helps you get started. So we do cater for smaller organizations where they do have these technical complexities, and are also looking at government business as well.
Okay, excellent. Let's do a deep dive into your product line. What is the intention of the Vulcan Cyber Platform, and how does it work? Can you do a deep dive into that for us, please?
Yeah, for sure. So our platform doesn't actually replace your risk or vulnerability scanners. We integrate with the tools that are already installed in the organization, whether they're scanning the code, the cloud, different hosts. We work with different endpoint scanners and so on, and also IT and cloud providers. And we aggregate all the data in one place. We help prioritize the vulnerabilities and the misconfigurations and risk, basically, according to the know-how, what we have today from threat intelligence and the actual risk that the vulnerability may pose at this moment, and also by environment parameters of the organization and whether this is a business-critical application or not. And after that, we prioritize, we're actually able to orchestrate and automate a lot of the processes that go into the actual remediation. So we can open tickets to the right people to actually remediate the vulnerability. And once they do, we actually track that and give you, the security team, a view of exactly what's happening and how the remediation is progressing. And on top of that, we also have an analytics layer that you can use to report for compliance and manage. So it's really an end-to-end solution to all the risk management needs.
Excellent. Now, it looks like you offer three distinct solutions as well, to the risk-based vulnerability management, app vulnerability management, and the cloud vulnerability management. Can you describe these in more detail and let's know about that?
Yeah, sure. So first, there is the classic risk layer, if you will. You need to have a process which requires also prioritization and understanding, you know, which vulnerabilities are you going to actually remediate, and document that process for internal use or for auditing, exception, risk exception management, and approval process. That's one part of this where you have your program in order. And then on top of that, there are unique characteristics to application security where you want to understand exactly how the code vulnerabilities are impacting your applications and impacting your business. And we're able to ingest all the data from both the static code scanners and dynamic code scanners and align that with the rest of the infrastructure to give you this one unique view. So that's how we see that. And of course, communicating with the developers via Jira or ServiceNow, whatever tool they're using, or Slack, to get them the right information in order so they can actually do the fix. And for the cloud, really in the last year or so, we've noticed that the demand for cloud security, of course, rising. On top of being able to integrate with all the different cloud providers directly and the different cloud scanners today, we're able to give you a lot of insights into the actual posture of different cloud assets, whether they're internet accessible or not, and you can utilize this information to better prioritize your vulnerabilities.
Okay, excellent. Now, tell us about the technological architecture that you use. Do you use Azure or the AWS, or do you use both, perhaps?
Oh, so that's interesting, actually. So we use a balance of AWS and Microsoft Azure. We rely on the Microsoft Analytics platform. We also use Snowflake, which is a great product and a great customer of ours. It's a combination of those.
Okay, excellent. Now, what is the cyber risk lifecycle, and how is that used to help your clients?
Yeah, so really the life cycle starts with actually knowing what you have in your environment. So basically, just understanding the scope of the different assets, and an asset could be, again, a host, a workstation, a server, a cloud instance, some code, some image, container image that you might have. And you need to understand what you actually have in the environment, and then make sure that actually all of these being covered and scanned by security tools. So one of our capabilities is actually giving you information on your scanning coverage and making sure that you're actually utilizing your security tools in the right way to cover the entire environment. That kind of takes you to the second step, where you need to create this system of record, single pane, to actually know all the different risks in a given environment. And over that, you can actually start prioritizing. Once you have all the risk in one place, you can actually start prioritizing and assigning remediation tasks to the people who actually need to fix those. And then once you decide on how you want to fix, because it's not always an easy decision, there are operational concerns on what could be remediated or not. It may impact the production environment. It may impact, if you're an e-commerce organization, for example, it may impact your selling ability. So these decisions are usually not taken lightly. So that's where we also help with the consideration by providing the, as much information as we can on how you can actually remediate a vulnerability in any given time. And then later on, once you actually decide to do that, we move on to the tracking phase. So where you see the progress of the remediation going on and making sure that nothing falls between the cracks. Because a lot of the times when we look into different environments and talk to organizations, you know, they send off, you know, an email saying, hey, dear IT, please fix this and that, and then kind of forget about this. And if you check after a few weeks or a few months, you can see that maybe, you know, half was resolved and half wasn't resolved. So being able to track and making sure that everything is actually remediated is a crucial part. And the last part of the life cycle is continuous improvement. So we want to see how did we do in the last few weeks, the last few months, and where can we improve, where we should put our focus on and really find the areas that are the weakest links and invest there or shift resources there if it's possible. Or maybe there's a root cause that's preventing us. Maybe it's educational or security awareness that needs to be handled. So really discovery, remediation, and tracking and improvement. These are the life cycle steps.
Okay, excellent. Now let's go back to your company, Vulcan Cyber, briefly here. Now, how is your outreach to your customers? Do you directly sell to them, or do you rely more on a partnership VAR model? How do you actually approach your clients?
Yeah, so most of our sales are direct, but we do have an extensive channel and partner network as well. We partner both with technology companies like CrowdStrike and Snyk that are valued partners of us, and Snowflake as well, that we work together. We also partner with cloud providers like AWS and Microsoft Azure. And lastly, we have also many different channel partners that we're working with that are also working to provide our platform to their customers.
Okay, excellent. Now, what are your plans for expansion down the road here? I mean, I know you're still in the early phases, you know, 5 years in, but what are your plans for expansion? Do you want to go into other countries, other foreign markets, or just have new products, new services? What are your plans?
Yeah, a little bit of both, you know. No, I think, you know, we still have a long way to go in the U.S., but we're also seeing very nice traction in Europe. So we will continue to invest in these regions while eventually expanding to additional countries. You know, we want to go to Australia, New Zealand. We want to go to APAC and of course, Latin America. So that's definitely on the horizon. In terms of product, there is a long way, unfortunately, I think, for the security industry, there's still a long way to go with risk management. We haven't solved everything. There are still many areas that need coverage. And there's a lot of things that we can still do with automation to reduce the heavy burden on the security teams as I see it now. So definitely a lot of product development in the future.
Okay, excellent. Now, as we come to the second part of the show here, there's just a couple of hot topics I want to talk to you about, and let me know your thoughts on some of these issues in cybersecurity today. The first one is about artificial intelligence. Now, as we know, that's a big buzzword being thrown around today in cybersecurity. A lot of vendors push AI. You know, they think that, you know, the client's all happy. They think they have great tools. You know, now ChatGPT is out right now. What are your thoughts on AI in general? Do you use them in your product lines? And is it a good thing or is it a bad thing? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's funny. I used to hate the use of the word AI. I think now it's impossible to ignore. Again, I did machine learning work almost 10 years ago, so I think that the area has really developed quickly, and it's really nice to see this these capabilities in the hands of almost now everyone. So that is great. I do think that we can utilize AI a lot in the security industry in order to automate a lot of tasks and really speed and gain ROI on the tasks that we're doing. In our company, we're using data science and machine learning and AI almost from day one. We started our research team a year after we started. And we actually use this to analyze very large database from vendors and correlating different fixes to vulnerabilities. We still do this today. We're also using that to detect threats and really understand from all the expert information that is out there, how does it relate to vulnerabilities and how dangerous are these vulnerabilities are. I think it's pretty obvious. You know, AI has a great future. It is a bit hyped, so I wouldn't necessarily buy a product only because it says it uses AI.
Right.
I think it's about the value. You know, it's about the value that you're getting from it, and then if it uses AI, that's nice. You know.
Okay. Excellent. Now, the other thing is this thing called the IoT or the Internet of Things. You know, this is where everything's connected together in the virtual and physical worlds. I find this to be kind of a scary proposition because it opens the attack surface for the cyber attacker. And I'm kind of an old-fashioned guy. I like to keep things simple and old-fashioned. You know, I'm not into all the latest technologies and everything. In fact, I still drive a very old Honda Civic, all analog instrumentation. What are your thoughts on, like, smart homes, smart cars, and everything all being connected together? Do you have a smart home or smart car where you're at?
Yeah, so first of all, we do. Secondly, I think Honda Civic is a great car. I do see, you know, the advances of IoT. First of all, when you talked about, you know, expanding the product, so we do see some demand from our customers to also be able to manage the risk from IoT devices. That, I think, kind of goes into your point of, you know, this could be risky by connecting everything. So organizations that use IoT devices, they already identified that there is risk there, and they want to control it. For an individual, I think that the risk is, you know, the impact could be less, but the risk is greater because as individuals, as consumers, we have less control of the security gates and the security monitors that we can put in. I do have some smart devices in my home. I control my water heater automatically, and I have, you know, Google Home integrated to almost everything that I have in my home. So I do use these, but there is of course an inherent risk to this. I am expecting that security vendors and service providers will provide solutions to this. Because we will start to see attacks. As we saw in ransomware a few years ago, you know, just think of the scenario of someone creating an IoT ransom and basically shutting off your home. Even my door, by the way, my entrance door is IoT remotely controlled. So I can open and close my home door via an app. And then if someone takes control of this and asks for like 3 bitcoins to let me into my house, that could be very annoying.
Right. Okay, excellent. Now, another one I want to ask you about is the cybersecurity insurance. Now, here in the U.S., that's a very big topic. You know, and a lot of the insurance companies here in the U.S. have really clamped down on the requirements. They now require policyholders to test if they have their controls in place. What is it like in Israel? Is it the same situation, or what is it like there?
So, unfortunately, not. I don't think it's this advanced. We really have basic cyber insurance here. Personally, I am a great believer in the concept of cyber insurance. I think especially if you ignore large organizations for a minute, if you look at SMBs and smaller enterprises, you know, the situation today where every SMB needs to actually own a bunch of security tools and security people to manage that, I think it doesn't make a lot of sense. If we don't get to take our water from the well anymore. We have a faucet in our house, and we don't do our own mechanics on our cars. Maybe on your Honda Civic you do some mechanics for fun, if you enjoy that.
Yeah.
But usually you go to a garage. You know, you go every year to a garage. They do the treatment to the car, and you have experts to manage that. And if you have a car accident, you have an insurance company that you go for and claim, and then the garage will fix your car. I hope that someday we will get to the situation where cyber insurance could actually provide these capabilities. And we are working with some cyber insurance startups that are working on this vision, but it will take a while.
Okay, excellent. Now, just a couple more issues here. COVID-19 and the remote workforce, as you know, 3 years ago, you know, this all started in China, and it's turned the world upside down. You know, unfortunately, a lot of bad things have happened because of COVID, but there have been a couple of good things, you know, like the vaccines coming out to market quicker here in the U.S. and the remote workforce. You know, a lot of people thought this would be something that would come out in about 4 or 5 years, but in a matter of 2 months, the 99% remote workforce has now evolved. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think this is going to now be a permanent fixture here in the U.S.? And what is it like in Israel? Is work from home now the norm now, or how is it like there?
Yeah, so that's really interesting. So before COVID started, we actually had a large office in San Francisco that, of course, we couldn't utilize for a while. And then today, in the U.S., our entire team is completely remote. We do have some offices for some people, but most of the workforce, like, we don't have any enforcement on, you need to be in Silicon Valley or you need to be in New York State or whatever. We're actually hiring from everywhere. So that's a huge plus. I think for companies where a lot of companies, they don't want to let it go. So I'm sure that will continue. In Israel, the situation is interesting because the country is much smaller. So the concept of commuting is it's an hour or 2 hours from like whenever you actually reside. So we did start with kind of this remote, and there were many companies doing remote or hybrid work situation, and we're seeing more and more companies actually going back to the office. I will say that for teams that need to collaborate, for example, on R&D projects, there is a huge benefit of meeting face to face. So I think we'll remain in this hybrid situation. Now I'm actually talking to you from my home because we did a remote work day. I do go to the office almost every day. So yeah.
Okay, excellent. Now, one last topic I wanted to talk about is data privacy. Here in the U.S., you know, data privacy and all over the world it's a huge hot button topic. We have the CCPA, we have the GDPR. You know, every country is coming out with their own thing. Every state is coming out with their own different version of these laws. How is it like in Israel? Do you have data privacy laws there as well, too, or are there any being going that will be passed into legislation?
Yeah, so there is some data privacy regulation that is already quite old, I would say. It's not very enforced. So there are some regulations, but I wouldn't say that it's strictly enforced. But as many Israeli companies like Vulcan as well are global companies, eventually we see ourselves adhering to both U.S. and European regulations. So, you know, we know about GDPR, we know about CCPA, and as global companies, it's even easier, and it makes sense to just comply with these privacy regulations anyway. So I would say that the de facto mode is that a lot of companies actually adhere to these regulations.
Okay, excellent. Now, tell us, we wrap up our show here. You know, the world has changed quite a bit here in the U.S. We have inflation and God knows, and there's the geopolitical concerns of Russia and Ukraine. All of this has changed the cyber world, definitely. How do you foresee the rest of the year turning out in terms of the cybersecurity threat landscape? What threat variants do you see that will be more prevalent? I have my thoughts on this, and I'll share them with you, but I want to see what your views are first.
Yeah, so I think, and we're seeing this in the market, you know, some companies are struggling, and it's not a laughing matter. But on the other side, we don't really see security budgets shrinking, and that's for a good reason, because there is so shortage in the security area. And unfortunately, when times get tougher, I think that you know, the criminals, they don't rest. They actually, you'll see more cyber attacks, unfortunately, and you'll see more crime. You know, when the trouble in the economics, people tend to do more crime, and there will be more cyber crime, unfortunately. And I think that organizations will still have to invest in cyber security. That's just my thoughts.
Okay. Well, I think in terms of my view, I think attacks on critical infrastructure here in the U.S. will be a big issue. You know, instead of having airplanes crashing in buildings like we saw in 9/11, I think what could potentially have the large-scale cataclysmic attack on major cities, you know, where you'll have water supply shut down, the national power grid. I know it sounds very depressing, but that's kind of what I think what could happen, because our critical infrastructure is so old, you know, we have such old legacy technology. You just can't rip that out, and you just can't put new ones in, and you can't be careful about putting any upgrades in there. So those are just my thoughts on that. But anyway, now, as a business owner, you've had your business now for about 5 years. What kind of experiences can you partake in our audience who may want to start their own business? What words of wisdom do you have to share, in other words?
Well, find good partners. I have two amazing co-founders that we share the responsibility, and we hired a great team. So really invest in people. You know, people is what we have. You know, that's a real IP. You know, when we have good people that are just doing, you know, amazing work, and we have bad people, then it's really hard to fix that. So really invest in recruiting the best people that you can get. I know it's kind of benign, but really I truly believe this. And before I had a business, I also went also to work in workplaces where I admire the people that work there. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah, because I know in cyber, the mantra is that people are the weakest link in the security chain, but I take the opposite, and people are the greatest. Especially. But anyway, Tal, what's the best way for someone to contact you in case they have questions about your services, or they just want to talk to you about cybersecurity, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Really, feel free to reach out on LinkedIn, Tal Morgenstern, or just email me, Tal at Vulcan.io. Happy to chat any time. And if you want to learn more about Vulcan, you can go to Vulcan.io and reach out. That's also great. And try test the product for free. It's there.
Excellent. Well, Talby, thank you for your time this morning, and we hope to have you again on a future podcast.
Definitely. Thank you very much, Ravi. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. Take care. Have a good day.
Yeah, take care.